So we are holding on min test on the bays just above the middle of the onward by the two dots line, the line that gives the buy sell fold. We said in the mission, Alex Drum, holder, that person that you. Okay. Well, nice crowd today then. Okay, so we're beginning on the test on the day is just above the middle of the onward line against the bias off above the two dots. The Mishnah said Alag Shomim Fulla, that the rain you make the bracha hatov v'hametiv. So the question is, what do you mean? Alag Shomim hatov v'hametiv mevarech. What do you mean? What do you mean that for rain you say the bracha hatov v'hametiv? V'ha'amar Rababohu v'amlom nasnisatana. Didn't Rababohu say, or some say we learn in a Mishnah, me'evesan v'vorchen Alag Shomim. First of all, when do we make a bracha on rain? From, in other words, how much rain has to fall in order to be making any bracha at all? Mishiyese chosam likras kala. When the chosam comes out to greet the kala, which means Rashi explains over here that what it means is you have puddles of water on the ground. So when a drop of rain falls on the puddle or whatever on the water on the ground, then like some of the water in the puddle jumps up, like you know how when a drop falls into a puddle or something and splashes upward. So that's shi'ata chosam l'kras kala. You have, so to speak, like a kala is falling down from the heavens and the chosam jumps up from earth, from the puddle on the ground to meet it. In a different place where it brings this in Tainis, Rashi has a different explanation over there that what it means is that you have different streets, different side streets that run into a main street that water is pouring out of them, is pouring along the ground out of one street on one, out of one side street, out of one alley on one side of the street, and then out of another alley on the other side of the street. So once you have that much rain, then once you have that amount of rain, then you say bracha on it. My mevorchin, and what bracha do you say? Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So now the point is, our Mishnah had said you say atov v'hametiv, but Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you say modim anachalach afol tipa v'tipa shayrad talanu. We thank you, Hashem, for every drop that you brought down for us. Hold on. One second, we'll talk about. Rabbi Yechanan Messiah Bahachi. Rabbi Yechanan said that you finish the bracha. You don't just say a short nusach like that. You continue, like we say in Nishmas, Ilufinu Mole Shirachayam Mechola, if our mouths were as full of song as the ocean, etc., Einon Maspikim Lahodis Bachashem Alekena, we wouldn't be able to fully thank you, Hashem, Ab Tishtachave, until the Chokrem Lachanach Tishtachave. One thing is, by the way, some of the Mephoshim point out an interesting point. You know, we say in their lines like Mechera Vitaltonu, Megever Milatonu, that you saved us from the sword, you saved us from pestilence. So what does that have to do with the fact that rain fell? So they give an answer because when there's no rain and there's people have a hard time making a living, then you're more likely to have that people are going to go and fight each other with the sword and there's likely to be other kinds of disasters or whatever. So the fact that there's rain means that they were saved from all of that. Anyway, and then we finish off, Baruch Atah Hashem Roiv HaHadoi. We finish off, blessed are you Hashem, the many thanks. So what does that mean? Roiv HaHadoi is for the Kol HaHadoi. Now the word Roiv can have a double meaning. The word Roiv can mean the many, but it can mean the many, but it can also mean most. You know, we have the Purim is coming up in a week. You have it at the end of the Megillat Esther. We're also the Roiv Echav. On the surface of it, it means the last pasuk. On the surface, it means that Mordechai was acceptable and was accepted by the many of his brothers, meaning the many Jewish people throughout the empire. But you have the Gemara actually doubts their Roiv Meloshim majority, that only the majority accepted him, that you had a minority of the Sanhedrin who didn't agree with his shitta becoming prime minister. So the word Roiv is kind of ambiguous. So how can you say Baracha Roiv HaHidoyz? Omar Rava Ema Hakel HaHidoyz. So Rav says, you're right. The actual nusach of the bracha at the end of it should be Hakel HaHidoyz, Hashem whom we thank. Amar HaPapa, so the Papa does, as he often does, when you have a difference of machloikas about what bracha to say, Hilkach Nemrinu L'Tavayu, therefore we should say both of them, Rav HaHidoyz, the Hakel HaHidoyz. We should say both, because each one, Rav Inayona points out that each one has an advantage over the other one. Rav HaHidoyz, he said, has a disadvantage that it sounds like it means most of them, but on the other hand, it means all, but the point is, it could sound like it means most, but on the other hand, if you just say, okay, l'haydoz, it makes it sound like, okay, there's Hashem who we thank, and then there are others who we thank as well. So therefore, in that sense, roiv l'haydoz is better. So like this, you say both of them, and this way you have the advantages, and this way you have the advantages of both of them. Many of the Rishonim say that actually it's not that you say the nusach roiv l'haydoz to kei l'haydoz, like that, like a double lashon, but rather that you combine them together. Kale roiv l'haydoz. Hashem, to whom we give.
Right.
No, but again, Roiv has a double meaning, especially Marshall points out at the beginning of the bracha, we said, so that itself makes it clear, so that helps make it clear that Roiv over here does not mean most, as in we're not giving Hashem all our thanks, but rather that Roiv over here means the many. Okay. Anyway, the point is that the El Akasha, so the bottom line is we have Akasha. The Mishnah had said that you say Atariv Amesiv, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you say Moizim Anach Malach and the Evil Kinu Malashir Kayam. So the answer is Loikasha, Hod Shama Mishma, Hod Chazam Mesiv. The difference is, did he hear from other people, for example, that rain fell, then he would say Atariv Amesiv. Hod Chazam Mesiv, as opposed to if he saw the rain falling himself, then he would say Moizim Anach Malach. So the question is, Deshama Mishma, and the Surah Service. Okay, but if he heard it, then isn't that, then that's the same thing as the Surah Service. We said in the Mishnah, it's not all the Surah Service, I'm a Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv. For any exceptionally good news, you say HaTov HaMeitiv. So therefore, so obviously rainfall, rainfall in those days when most people were in agriculture, and even nowadays most people aren't, but still rain is very important. So it's good news. So just the fact that you heard it makes it that you say Atzei Vameter. So what's the chiddush that if you heard it, you should say Atzei Vameter? What is the Mishnah adding by that? Otnan, we learned in the Mishnah, Al B'Sidot Tzavus, Lame Baruch Atzei Vameter. So no. Ela Aydi Ba'Aydi D'Chozi Mech. Then no, the case is both of them are talking about where you actually saw the rainfall. The Loikasha, there's still no contradiction. Hod Osa Purta, Hod Osa Tura. It depends whether a little bit fell or a lot fell. If a little bit fell, then you say Modim Anach Malach, and if a lot fell, then you say Atov Vametiv. And many other Rishonim learn the other way. That's how Rashi says. Many other Rishonim learn the other way around. That if a little bit fell, then you say Atov Vametiv, and if a lot fell, then you say Modim Anach Malach.
Well, either can represent the best bracha.
Okay, so therefore, so far the Gemara is giving one answer. Wait, the Gemara is going to give other answers as well. This one is not the final word. This one is not the final word. La halacha. Okay, but there's a difference between whether there was a little or whether there was a lot. The Iboy same, another possibility, Hazahad to Asa Tova, both of them are talking about there was a lot. Volekasha, Hod the Islay Ara, Hod the Leslay Ara. It depends whether he has land or not. If he has land of his own, that's benefiting from, if he has land that he owns, that's benefiting, farmland that is, that's benefiting from the rain, then Hod the Leslay Ara, versus if he doesn't. Islay Ara, Atova Mate. So if he has land, he would say Atova Mate. And if he doesn't have land, then he would say Modim Anach Malach. There are Rishonim who learn the Reef and others bring that the idea is if he has, so what if he has land, so it depends, they would say. If he has land that he owns with somebody else in partnership, then he would say Atov HaMeitiv. The Gemara is going to mention in the rule that if you have something good that happened which you and other people benefit from, then you say Atov HaMeitiv, as opposed to if you have something that only you benefit from, then you say Shechiyanu. So they say that would be the case over here. If you have land of your own, which you don't own in partnership with somebody else, you'd say Shechiyanu. If you have land in partnership with somebody else, you say Atov HaMeitiv. The Rosh doesn't like that, because the fact of the matter is, even if you own land by yourself, okay, but other people are still benefiting together with you, other people who have fields, so shouldn't you be saying Atov HaMeitiv either way? By the way, though, what it does say in Shulchan Aruch, to answer your question, saying why don't we say this bracha all the time, is in particular in Shulchan Aruch, it says we don't say it in countries like most of Europe and in America, where rain comes all the time. There's no particular time when, like, there's a significant amount of time when there's no rain, and therefore we start having hardship. And Eretz Yisrael, the places, you know, maybe some of the posts can say, in places of climate like that, where you have times when you can go a long time without rain. Well, first of all, you have whole periods of the year when there's no rain at all, like the spring and summer. But besides that, also, yes, in those places you can have drought sometimes. That would be the kind of places where you say such bracha.
Either way, it's still a bracha here.
That's fine. And if you want to say Modi Manach Malach, then Gizun Tehei, say whatever you want, but don't use Hashem's name. It still would be a bracha l'batala to say it in places like here where it rains regularly and we don't know.
That's the essence of the bracha.
That's fine. The point is, you want to thank Hashem in your own words, fine, but don't say a bracha. Don't say a bracha, because that would be a bracha l'batala.
I'm a farmer,
then you would see, you would thank Hashem when rain falls. You would thank Hashem, and you would say, Baruch Hashem. No, you wouldn't say Atzai Vameitiv. You would say, Baruch Hashem, thank you, Hashem, for making rain fall. But you wouldn't say an actual Baruch Atzai Vameitiv or Modi Manach Alach, because those use Hashem's name, and it would be a Baruch Al-Matala to say them in places in this part of the world where we don't know what droughts are. Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa, that there's a difference whether you have a partnership or not. The short of the matter, in other words, the bottom line of Braisa says, Al Shaloi Hu Amu Baruch Shef Yonu Wikimanu, when you have something good that happened to you personally, and you personally benefit from it, but not necessarily others, then you say, Baruch Shef Yonu Wikimanu, Al Shaloi Val Shachavere, if it's something that other people are benefiting from as well, Omer Baruch Hatov Vameitiv. Then you say, Anu Hatov Vameitiv, that Hashem is good to me and does good to others. So that's the difference then. So the major difference is whether you have land or not. And Shulchan Aruch also mentions, based on some Rishonim, that we still maybe accept this definition of what we mentioned before, between seeing it versus seeing it fall, between seeing it fall versus only hearing about it, that there might be a difference. So the question is, so are you telling me that any time you have something good that happens where only you enjoy the benefit of it, you don't say, if they tell a person that your wife gave birth to a, if they tell him your wife gave birth to a boy, now who else besides you and your immediate family is benefiting from that?
Many people benefit from that.
No, you have other people who are happy to hear the news. But the kind of benefit we're talking about is where they have some kind of actual practical benefit from it, not just that they're happy to hear the news. Otherwise, every good news would be Atzai Vameitiv. But the answer is, Hasam Nami, Deke Ishtei Ba'adei, Dinichalav Azachar. The answer is, because his wife also enjoys it, she also wants to have a boy, because you're showing him a swine. The Rashba explains, for example, based on Gemara's and other places, a boy is more likely, when he grows up, to help support the family. The expression the Gemara has elsewhere, even though women aren't mitzvah on period of Arabia, the expression in another place in the Gemara is that even a woman, after all, when she gets old, she needs somebody to bury her also after 120, and it's usually the boys that are involved in that, not so much the girls. So therefore, you would say a bracha to vameitiv when a boy is born, because both the husband and wife benefit from it, and that's a benefit that's the two people. So therefore, to vameitiv. By the way, what it says in Shulchan Aruch is that so a girl, you don't say Atzai Vameitiv, however, you do say Shech Yonu the first time you see her, because we learned before that when you see a good friend for the first time, you say Shech Yonu, and your daughter is no less important than that.
Since you're mentioning it, I just saw a friend I haven't seen her.
Okay. All right, onward. Toshma. No. If he's a really dear friend, then you really genuinely feel happy that you see him. Then, Okay. Toshma, mes aviv v'hu yorshay. We learn another braita though. If a person's father passes away and he is yarshining from his father, he has an inheritance from his father. B'tchila oim baruch dayin emes. First he says the bracha with shema malchus, that Hashem is the true judge for the fact that his father passed away. All of a sudden, for oim baruch hatov v'ameitiv. Later on, he says hatov v'ameitiv for the fact that he has an inheritance. So therefore, now again, who else is benefiting from it that he should be saying Atzai Vameitiv? The answer is Hosam Nami, Deika Achi, Deko Yarsi Bade. The answer is, you're right. When does he say Atzai Vameitiv? If there are other brothers who share in the inheritance. If there aren't, in other words, the implication is he would say Shechi Yonim. Toshma. Well, Minatoda, sisters don't inherit, right? I mean, I suppose if Minatoda, we know if a man has only daughters, then the daughters inherit, like when there's cloth clubs. So, okay, then the daughters, I guess, are saying the bracha. But otherwise, Migintoda, I don't know how they do it nowadays in American society and other gracious societies. How Jews do is another question, but Minatoda. Maybe not, but even so, I mean, many people, what they do is they arrange it ahead of time while they're still alive, like it's trust or whatever, and then I don't know, kosher, but at least it's not a, yeah. Okay, anyway, whatever. You're allowed to give them before, the person's allowed to give them before he passes away, but whatever, this isn't the place to talk about it. All right, onward. Toshma. Maybe Baba Basra, maybe. Toshma, shinu yayin ein tzorich levarich. We learn in a braisa that if you have different kind of wine Ein Tzarich Lavarich, you don't have to make another brought. In other words, if you were drinking one kind of wine and then they brought another better kind of wine, you don't have to say another bracha b'ra priya gofen. Shinui mokim Tzarich Lavarich. On the other hand, if you go to a different place, a different house, a different room or whatever, then you do need to say a different bracha gofen because the bracha that you made in the first place doesn't count. But Amr of Yosef, Abba Amr of Yechon, Afafisha Amru Shinui Yain Ein Tzarich Lavarich. Even though the Chachamim told us that you don't have to make another bracha hagofen for new wine, avo oiv borach hatov ametiv, but you do say a bracha hatov ametiv on the new wine. That's now the question is, who else is benefiting from it? The answer is chasam nami geikam bnei chavura the shasav adei. The answer is there are. You have other people are sitting together and drinking, so therefore they're all benefiting from it. Now you have actually there's a siman in Shulchan Aruch, siman kofayin hay that deals with these details. Now that brings them in seder birkas hanani. You have a number of points over here. First of all, Tosfos says you only do that for wine. You don't do that, for example, if they bring you a better kind of bread or a better kind of meat, because we learned back in the sixth parak, we learned on Daf Lamed Hey, Lamed Vav, that wine has two advantages. It fills you up and it makes you happy, as opposed to other kinds of food, is one or the other. So therefore, we make a special bracha, atov v'ametiv. The Chachamim set up, therefore, that you make a special bracha, atov v'ametiv, on wine. There's other Rishonim give another reason also. We learned that when they put atov v'ametiv into benching, the reason was because of haruge beta, because the dead of beta were finally allowed to be buried many years later. And we said over there, it's brought in Midrashim and the Yerushalmi. That's a tov amitiv, and then later on it was a thing. So we said that bracha because of haruge beta. Now we said over there that the haruge beta, these people who were killed over there, Adrianus, the Roman emperor of that time, had them stacked up as a wall around his vineyard. And the Gemara in Gittin mentions that they fertilized their vineyards for many years with the blood of these people. So therefore, it's a joke we're talking about. But the point being, in other words, Adrianus had estates all over the place. The point being, in other words, that there's a certain connection between haruge beter and wine. So therefore, when we're drinking wine, we say atov v'ametiv again to thank Hashem for that, even after all that horrible tragedy and everything, that eventually they were able to be buried and their bodies hadn't rotted all the years. Because he wanted to crush the Jewish people.
What was the pretext?
And the pretext was that they had rebelled, that you had the war of Bar Kokhba. More dinim about this business of atov v'ametiv on wine. First of all, Tosfos brings over here that it's not necessarily the second wine has to be better. As long as the second wine is not worse than the first wine, then you would say atov v'ametiv on it. But there are a number of other considerations that are needed to say atov v'ametiv, something which makes it somewhat uncommon. One of them is, I don't know how many people sit and drink wine socially nowadays, but whatever.
Every December, in Alsace, there was new wine, and the whole town made
atov v'ametiv.
Yeah.
Okay. So then in that case, so you have when new wine is brought. But there's a few different things. It has to be that the new wine was actually fermented separately from the old wine. So in other words, like in terms of nowadays, it would have to be different brands. Right. In terms of nowadays, it would have to be like different brands or whatever. Not like, let's say, you just opened up another bottle of the... So in other words, if it was another barrel of the same type of wine, that also counts. And you say, atov v'ametiv, but not if... Hello? It wouldn't be if they were first fermented together and then just poured into different barrels.
Together, what do you mean?
Well, in other words, if you have, let's say, there was one gigantic barrel where you fermented the wine in, and then you split it up into smaller barrels, you wouldn't make atov v'ametiv on the second barrel. But if they were to begin with fermented in separate barrels, you would. You also have to have that it's not that you're bringing the next wine because you ran out of the first wine. It has to be that you have other people drinking with him. There's like five or six criteria that it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that you need in order to say the bracha atov v'ametiv. But when you have those, then yes, you would say atov v'ametiv when there's new wine brought to the table. And so the point is that the atov v'ametiv is the fact that there are other people drinking together with him. So again, it's good for him and it's good for other people. Tosfos points out, unlike before, we were saying that if you have something good for yourself only, then you say shechianu, and if it's good for other people, you say atov v'ametiv. Here, if you're drinking new wine by yourself, you wouldn't say shechianu on it. So it's not really, you can't really say it's shechianu, you only say for something new, not for just say you opened up a new barrel of wine. Okay. Fine. We said in the Mishnah, Bona Bayis Chodesh V'Kana Kelim Chadash. And we said if a person built a new house, or bought, for that matter, a new house, or if he bought new Kelim, which primarily means clothes, so then he says Shechiyonim. So Rav Huna says that's only if he doesn't have something like it already. So let's say, for example, you know, you talk about a suit. So if he already has a suit, then Rav Huna is saying he wouldn't make another bracha Shechiyonim when he buys another suit. If he already has one of the same kind of thing, ain't sorok lavorach, and he doesn't need to make a bracha shechiyonim. But Rabbi Yechanan says, no, I feel the yeshle kayyotzeh ban sorok lavorach. No, even if he has another one of the same thing, he still has to make the bracha. Even let's say, for example, the Yarshin one, but as far as he bought it and as far as he's concerned, it's new to him. Implying Miklal, now the implication seems to be when we're saying that if he has already, means in other words, for example, like Rashi said, that he Yarshin one. Miklal, if he kona, because of a kona, so the implication seems to be that if he bought one and then later on he bought another one, divrei hakol ein tzarech lavarech, then everybody would agree that he doesn't need to make the bracha, because even Rav Yechanan is saying that it's new, in other words, it's a new experience for him to buy this, because the other one he didn't buy, he got by a Yerusha, for example, implying that if it's not a new experience for him to buy it, then he wouldn't be making the bracha. The Ikadami, that's all one version. Then we have another version of how the machlokes goes. Amar Rav Huna, Loishanu Ela Shalekana V'Chazer Akana. In the second version, Rav Huna is saying that only if he didn't buy and then buy again, then if he's buying for the first time, that's when he would say Shechianu. Avakana V'Chazer Akana Ain Tzarech Lavarach. But if this is the second time he's buying a suit or whatever, then he does not need to make the bracha. In other words, in the second version, Rav Huna is saying that if you yaushined one and then you bought another one, then you would say the bracha, but not if you bought a second one. We'd be saying, even if this is the second time you're buying, you would still need to make the bracha.
And if you buy two suits,
then you would say one bracha on both of them. Miklal, the key yeshle bakana, divrei hakol tzarech lavarech. So the implication of what Rav Yechanan is saying is that what both of them are saying, Rav Huna and Rav Yechanan, is that if you had one already, for example, from a Yerusha, and then you bought another one, then everybody would agree you need to make the bracha. The two different versions of the machlokes.
Women have to make
a... Why are they not? What would be the difference? Yeah. Women are just as high as the praise Hashem as men. By the way, when we talk about clothes over here, Tosfos mentions, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, we're not talking about clothes like socks or shoes or whatever. We're talking about clothes that are important. Well, we're talking about clothes that are choshu, that are important to a person. Yeah, there are posts who say, for example, that a poor person would make socks because, for example, to him it's important. You know, he can barely afford socks. But the consensus of the post is not like that. You only say them on something really important, like a suit. Maybe you say a palace, maybe on a palace or other
things.
Not a palace. A palace cotton you only wear because of the mitzvah. It's not really considered an important beggar in and of itself. A palace gadol, maybe you would.
And
these are clothes out here. Okay. All right. Okay, the Gemara says Meitzi. Okay, so again, we have two versions of the Machlokas of Rav Huna and Rav Yechanan. One is that in the first version, according to Rav Huna, that you only make the bracha only if this is the first one of its kind that you have. So you didn't have one previously from Yerusha, and you didn't previously buy one. Rav Yechanan in the first version would say that as long as it's the first time you're buying, if you have a previous one. And the second version is Rav Huna is saying that if this is the first time that you're buying, even if you had one from Yerusha, and Rav Yechanan, we're saying it doesn't matter, even if it's the second time you're buying. So the question is maybe they have a contradiction. We learn in a braisa, bona bais chodesh ve'en lo kayotzeh, if a person buys a new house and he doesn't have a similar one, or kona kelim chadashim ve'en lo kayotzeh, or he buys new clothing and he doesn't have similar clothing to that, then he has to make the bracha. Yes, like kayotzeh, but if he already has a house or clothing like that, Ein tzarech lavarech divrei Rav Meir, then Rav Meir would say he does not have to make the bracha. Rav Yehuda, I'm a ben kach or ben kach tzarech lavarech. Rav Yehuda says either way you do need to make the bracha. So which Tanoim's opinions fit with which Amiroim's opinions? B'shleim lo lishna kama. So it works out well according to the first version of the machlokes. Rav Huna k'Rav Meir, Rav Yechanan k'Rav Yehuda. Rav Huna is saying exactly like Rav Meir that if you already have a house, then you don't say another bracha on the second one. That would be, which was what Rav Meir is saying. Rav Huna is saying exactly the same thing. Rav Yechanan is saying as long as this is the first one that you're buying, then you make a bracha on it, which would be like Rav Yehuda. Ella, Lelushna Basra, but according to the second Lashon, Bishlema, Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda. Rav Huna, fine, is going like Rav Yehuda's version in the second version. Ella, Rav Yechanan, the Amakaman, but who is Rav Yechanan going like? When Rav Yechanan says that regardless, you make the bracha, even if you already have one, even if you already bought one previously, the Braita is not mentioning that case. So who is Rav Yechanan going like? Who is he going like? Like Rav Meir, but like Rav Yehuda. He doesn't seem to be going according to either Rav Meir or Rav Yehuda. And in fact, the halacha is like Rav Yechanan against Rav Huna. So how can we have that if we don't even have an opinion of a Tana that follows him? The answer is Amalach Rav Yechanan. The answer is Rav Yechanan will tell you about the Braita. Who adin the Rav Yehuda kona v'chaz v'kona nami tzarech l'varech. As a matter of fact, the Braita does not mean that Rav Yehuda would say you don't make a bracha if this is the second one you bought. He would say that even in that case, you make a second bracha. You make another Shechianu. The reason why they're only arguing about the case where he has one from a Yerusha, and then he bought one, because he wants to tell you how far Rav Meir goes. That Rav Meir is going so far as to say that even if you already had one because from a Yerusha, let's say, so you never had the experience of buying one, then you still don't have to make a bracha. How much more so if this is the second one that you're buying already, so you're ready, you don't have as much, according to him, you don't have as much simcha from buying the second one because you already used it. So Rav Yechanan would say the Braita is presenting the machlokas in that scenario, but not to say they wouldn't also argue in the case where this is the second one he buys. Okay, the question is okay, but still they could be arguing, the Braita could have presented their argument about the case where he's buying a second one and say that he doesn't need to make the bracha, and that would be lahidiyach ha-koyched Rav Yehuda, and that would be telling you how far Rav Yehuda goes. That in other words, you would say that the machlokas should have been presented when he's buying a second time. Ain't Tzarech L'Varech is a mistake over here, but because Rabbi Yehuda would say you do make a bracha. But let the Braita say that even if he's buying a second one, he makes a bracha according to Rabbi Yehuda, and that would tell you how far Rabbi Yehuda goes, that even in that case, he tells you to make another Shechianu. One second. The answer is Koyach Behetera, obviously. Right. The answer is the Koyach of Heter is the Braita would prefer to show the Heter, how far Rabbi Meir goes in being master. Now, you have an interesting point in that, which is that Tzlach points out, we usually say, Sofet brachas lahokel. In other words, the question of whether you make a bracha or not, if you say you don't make a bracha, is the kula. So that means, in other words, why are we calling it koyach dehetera to say that he shouldn't say, to say that he shouldn't say the bracha? And the answer is, the answer is Shechianu is a little bit different than other brachas. Most other brachas, you only say them when you have the objective situation where you have to say them. You have a particular food, you have a particular fragrance, whatever. Shechianu is a little bit more, there's a little more flexibility. You can say Shechianu on something which gives you Simchas Halev, even if it's not something that objectively, even if it's not necessarily something that's listed in the parak over here. So therefore, when Rameir is talking about that you don't need to make the bracha, so he's saying, so it's more of a kula, in other words. So he's being master you that even though you could have thought that you have a reason to say Shechianu over here, and maybe you should be careful to say it, because after all, Shechianu is one of those brachas that you can say at any time you have Simchas Halev. Nevertheless, Rameir is telling you that you don't have to do that, which is a kula.
You don't have to.
You don't have to, because he's saying Tzarech L'Varech, which means it's a kula.
You could have thought
that you should have to, right. Okay. Anyway, the halacha is like Rav Yechanan. So even if this is the second or third or whatever that you're buying, you still make the bracha Shechianu. It's brought some of the Rishonim also say that when you get a new suit or whatever, you should also say the bracha Malbish Arumim. What we're knowing, because not everybody agrees to that, is you put it on in the morning, and then you have in mind the bracha Malbish Arumim that you're saying in the morning should cover it as well. We're going to talk about it on Amud Beis. We'll probably get to tomorrow, but it's a shame about the different morning brachas, Malbish Arumim being one of them. So, yeah.
So you say both brachas together?
So you would say,
Malbish Arumim,
yeah.
Some people actually do it on the Shabbos, they'll put it on, which is not silly, they'll put it on the new one.
You just have to make sure to take out the tag, and you put it on the Shabbos, because that way you're honoring Shabbos with new clothing. You just have to make sure to take out all the tags before Shabbos. Yeah. All right. Because you can't cut off the tags on Shabbos. Yeah. Okay.
But you can carry them.
No, whatever. It's not so simple. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Mivarech al Rachol. We said in the Mishnah, you make a bracha on bad, me'ein hatoiva, in the way that you would say on good, and on the good in the way that you would say on bad. So what does that mean? Heichidah. In other words, so you have, sometimes you have news, which right now is one kind of news, and eventually something is something the opposite is going to develop out of it. Heichidah, what's the scenario when you have all the raw ma'atova? You're going to shock a bidka ba'ale. Suppose that a person had a leak in the dam or the dike or whatever around his field. Some water poured into his field and flooded it. So Apple got the tava healer today. So eventually it will come out good. The maska out of shirta and the shavcha, because eventually after the flood water goes away, you have new topsoil over there. So now the earth is going to be more fertile, and then it's more restored. The shavcha, and therefore it improves in value. Nevertheless, hashtami ara, he right now it's a bad thing because right now it destroyed the grain in his field. So therefore, for this year, so therefore he says baruch dynamis on it. And then we said you make a bracha on the good even when there's a semblance of bad. What does that mean? Heichidami. Going to Ashkach Mitzia. Suppose a person found a lost object. Afakab the Rohi the day. Now it might end up being bad for him. The Ishama Bamalka shock and lamine, because if the king hears about it, he'll take it away from him. In some places the law was that anything that you find, any lost object, belongs to the government. The Gemara mentions in Bog Matia, for example. Right. Suppose my mentions the Persians had such a law. So even nowadays, by the way, you have a similar thing in England and maybe in some other places as well, that if you find like an ancient buried treasure of gold or silver, then it goes to the crown. Then it's, I don't know how Israel, well, if it has archaeological significance, then yeah, you're going to have to...
Anything in Israel until prove another one.
Okay, there you go. So there's an example then. So then they might take it away from him, and they might even fine him, and then he ends up being worse off than he was before. Nevertheless, nevertheless, right now, on the spot, it's good, because after all, that Amnon points out, what happened now definitely happened. What's going to happen in the future? It might happen, it might not happen. You don't make brachas about what might be or what might not be in the future. You make a bracha about how the situation is right now.
He's learning this Gemara is good. Find a treasure under a house or under a...
That would be nice. That would be nice. You know the famous story of the guy who goes all the way to the bridge in Prague to find a treasure, and then the guard tells him that I had a dream because he had a dream, and then the guard tells him I had a dream that there's a treasure, that there's this guy named Chaim Yankel has a treasure under the fireplace in his house, and he goes back home and finds the treasure. They say it is a Siddish story with the meaning a bit like, you know, you're going all the way, you're going to a Rebbe or whatever to find the Oster Shavir Shemayim that you have within you. Go back to your own house and start digging and you'll find it. Okay.
The story doesn't say whether they learned this Gemara.
Anyway, okay. All right. Mishnah said, that if a person, that if a man's wife was pregnant, he says, that she should have a boy, we said, it's a useless tefillah, because once whatever it is, in the womb already it is. So the question is, what?
Before she's pregnant, yes.
Obviously before, yeah, but that's not what the Mishnah is saying. So the question is, so you're telling me that it's not effective to daven for rachmanos, that the sex of the baby should be changed?
40 days.
One second. Most of Rav Yosef, the acha yolda bas, Rav Yosef says, I have a contradiction. We say in Parshas Vayetze, the acha, after Leah had 6 sons, yolda bas, she had a daughter, Vatikra Shmod Dina, and she named her Dina, my v'acha, so what's this v'acha? It doesn't say that by any of the other Shvatim. For that matter, it doesn't say by her v'tahar, and it doesn't give a reason why she named her Dina, unlike all the other children, where it gives a reason. So what's going on over here? Amar Rav, l'acha shedona Leah din v'asma. It means it's after Leah pronounced the judgment against herself. But Amr, she said like this, Yudbeis Shvatim Asidin Lotus Miyakov. We know that there were 12 Shvatim destined to come out from Yaakov. Marsha points out, by the way, not that she herself was a Nevi'ah, and she knew that, but she herself wasn't a Nevi'ah. Sarah, among all the Himaris, was a Nevi'ah. The other ones were not. She said she's going to have So Rashi apparently, the Pasuk apparently holds that they were Nevi'ahs, but Marsha says a lot after they were, but whatever, she may have heard from Yaakov, whatever, anyway. So he's going to have 12 sons. Shisha Yossi Mimenu, six already have come out of me. Ba'abom and Ashfokas, 4 already have come from Bila and Zilpa. So far we're up to 10. In Zezocher, this one that I'm carrying is a boy. And Rochel is only going to be left with one. She's not even going to be on the level of the two Shvachos who had 2 apiece. So at least she should have 2. Miyad Nechalabas. So immediately that baby was transformed into a daughter. And therefore the Pasuk says she named her Dina. From the word Din. But therefore also that's why the Pasuk doesn't mention Batahar, because like so to speak, when she got pregnant with the baby, it wasn't yet the girl who became Dina, it was a boy.
Meaning it was before she was pregnant?
No, while she was pregnant. Wow. While she was pregnant. She found herself pregnant again, yes. So the point is that we see that you can daven and the sex of the baby will be changed. The answer is ain't that, exactly. Ain't that cute? Mice and nisim. You can't mention mice and nisim. You can't daven to Hashem for a nest to happen to you. At least not a nest that's beyond Teva like that. The boy same, another answer. To answer your question, this happened with Leah within the first 40 days of the pregnancy. During that time, it can be effective. Kedetanya, as we learn in the Bible, during the first 3 days after a man impregnates his wife, he should be davening that the zera should not spoil, because if it doesn't get fertilized within those 3 days, then it's going to spoil. It's going to get emitted from her body. Between 3 and 40 days, he can daven that it should be a boy. Now, after 40 days, it's too late to daven that the gender should be changed, but you can daven that the baby shouldn't become a sandal, which is, we learned in Nida, as a flattened-out baby. It gets crushed in the womb, and it resembles a sandal, which is a type of fish, like a type of flat fish. So you daven for that. From 3 to 6 months, you daven that the baby shouldn't be stillborn or miscarried. From 6 to 9 months, then you daven that it should be, once it's 6 months pregnancy, the baby at that point can be born and be viable, as we say throughout Shas, that a baby can be born in the 7 months of pregnancy and be viable. You have Shmuel, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu, a couple of people in Jewish history like that. So therefore, at that point, you don't daven that it shouldn't be a navel. You daven shayyate the shalom that it should come out in peace. So you see, therefore, that during the 40 days, you can daven that it should be a boy and it's not tefillah shalom. So that's the according to the second explanation. That's what happened with Leah. By the way, there's a different idea that it says, I think, in a Medrash, that actually what happened was, it's not that the baby was transformed into a girl, it's rather that Rachel at that time was also pregnant, and Hashem switched the baby in the womb, took the baby from Leah's womb and moved it to Rachel's, and vice versa. Hashem can do those things, obviously, but that's an interesting point, because that point is mentioned in Halacha on the question of post-Kibachronim, talk about this in connection with surrogate motherhood. When you have a baby, when you have an embryo is fertilized and then put into a, and then you have a woman who volunteers or gets paid or whatever to carry it to term in her womb, is it considered her baby or not? This point is relevant to that. There's a whole discussion about it among post-Machronim. I don't remember what the conclusions are, but we see from that point over here about Leah and Rachel that there's we consider Leah to be Dina's mother, even though according to that, Dina started out in Rachel's womb. So there's precedent for that. If I remember correctly, Rav Moshe actually paskins that the birth mother is the actual one who's considered the mother of Halacha, but I'm not sure about that. Okay. Anyway.
The surrogate
in that case would be considered the mother.
This point, why would Rachel become pregnant with a girl?
She became pregnant with a girl, because that's, yeah. Okay. Maybe it was a test for Leah to see if she's going to, you know, if she's going to do the right thing. All right. The question is, still, even during the 40 days, is it effective to daven that the baby should be a certain gender? We know the famous thing, Ish mazuya tchila yaledes nakeva. If the man emitted seed first, then the baby is going to be a girl. Ish mazras tchila yaledes zacher. And if the woman emitted seed first, then it's going to be a boy. Which means there's two possibilities what it means. Either it means if the woman ovulates before versus after they have relations, or it means if the woman orgasms before or after the man. And two different possibilities what it means. Either way, the point is, in other words, it's fixed at the time when they actually have relations.
Ovulate before relations, otherwise.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, because she could ovulate within a day or two after it. But the sperm is still viable for a couple of days. But anyway, the point is, there's two different ways of explaining our Gemara. Anyway, the point is that we see that at the time of conception, it's already fixed what sex the baby is going to be. So how is it effective during the 40 days of daven? The answer is, yes, but you can have a case where they're both mazriya at the same time, and then it's up in the air for 40 days. So you're allowed to daven during the 40 days because you never know. You don't really know who was mazriya first, but therefore you can, and you have reason to expect that. The Mishnah says, Hoya Baba Derech. The Mishnah gives another example of a tefilas shav. A person is traveling on the road, and he hears screaming from the city, and he says, Yehi Rosen, if that shouldn't be from my house, then it's a tefilas shav, because either it is or it isn't. There's no taking back what already happened. So the Gemara tells in that connection a story. Tanarabon and Ma'isi beHillel Azok and Shai Baba Derech. It happened once that Hillel was going on the road. The Shama Kel Tzvacha Ba'ir. He heard a sound of screaming in the city. Omar, he didn't daven that it shouldn't be in his house because he said that would be a tefillah shav. But he says Muftach Ani She'ends of a safe basin. I am certain that this is not in my house. No, he said it was a tefillah. The point is, he's saying as a statement of fact, I am certain that it's not in my house. So either because, so one possibility is because he was a very high-level tzaddik and he knew that something that's going to cause something like that is not going to happen in his house, that Hashem is going to protect him and his family from such things. However, there's also an explanation that the Shaloh HaKadosh says that it's not that he knew, it's not that he's guaranteed. I mean, even a tzaddik is not guaranteed that bad things might not happen. But he knew because he had taught his family to always accept everything that Hashem does, b'simcha, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, and therefore they're not going to be screaming about something bad that happened. Even if something bad happened, they wouldn't be screaming in a way that he would be
here.
Yeah, trapped with the land. Right. Yeah. Okay. But all of our Kosev Omer on a person like Hillel, the Pasuk says, Mishmur Ra Lo Yira, he's not afraid of bad news. Nochen Libo, but Tuach Hashem. His heart is ready and trusting in Hashem. So Hillel is like that, where he trusts in Hashem that nothing bad is happening to his family. Or that he taught them to always have emuna and bitachon and not be complaining and crying when something goes wrong. Omar Rava, so Rava points out in this connection, Kol Heched Darshis Lolahai Kra, this posik that we just quoted, Mishmur Ra Lo Yira, Nochem Liva Batorach Hashem, whichever way you darshin it, Mireshul Seifa Midrash, Miseifa Lireshul Midrash. Whether you read first the first half of the posik and then the second, you can understand it, or the second half and then the first half also, it makes sense, and you can darshin it. Mireshul Seifa Midrash, it means Mishmur Ra Lo Yira, he's not afraid of bad news, Matam, why not? Because Nochem Liva Batorach Hashem, because his heart is prepared and trust in Hashem. You can also understand it the other way around. And therefore, Mishmur Ra Lo Yira, because his heart is trust in Hashem, therefore he's not afraid of bad news. So one point is, in other words, like what's the cause and what's the effect? Is it he's a person who has betachon, therefore he's not afraid of bad news, or is it he's not afraid of bad news and that itself helps him develop betachon? There's a few different explanations of exactly what the Gemara means over here, but that's one of them. More on that topic about being afraid of things that might happen.
In a way, if he's not afraid, it could also mean he's got a lot of gaiva.
Well,
so how do you make a difference?
Well, a person has to know for himself. A person has to know for himself to do it properly and not it shouldn't be out of gaiva. It should be that he recognizes that everything that Hashem does is for the good.
Right.
Yeah. And Marshall points out, by the way, that basically when we say Misefa L'Reisha and Mireisha L'Sefa, in other words, what we're saying is the cause and the effect of it here are basically the same thing. This that he's not afraid and the fact that he trusts in Hashem is really the same thing. So therefore, you can look at it either way. Either one could be thought of as the cause and either one as the effect because they're really both the same thing. Okay. More on this topic. There was a Talmud who was walking behind Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi in the marketplace of Tzion. Tzion, on the surface of it, is a part of Yerushalayim. So maybe this was before the Korban, or maybe it was a place. Then maybe it was a place in a different part of Eretz Yisrael that they named this Tzion Street. Whatever. Chazir become masked. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi saw that the Talmud was afraid. Was afraid of something. Amalei chata'a. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi tells him, you are a sinner. You're a bal aveira. Because the prophet says that the sinners are afraid in Tzion. And here we're in Tzion. We're in the marketplace of Tzion. And you're afraid. So obviously something's the matter. You got to do tshuva. So again, either it was actually in Yerushalayim or it was a place named Tzion, whatever.
The student was behind
him, right? Yeah, because the student usually walks behind. The Talmud usually walks behind his rabbi. So he turned around and saw, yeah, I guess so. Amalei, so the Talmud asks, v'chiv asher adam mefachad Talmud. Don't you have a prophet that says, on the other hand, happy is a person who's always afraid? So it is a good thing. That's talking about Divrei Torah. A person should always be worried about Divrei Torah that he might forget them, because that'll stimulate him to review them and not forget them. But for other kinds of things, for things in the world, don't be afraid. Have the Tochan and have a Muna in Hashem. There is, by the way, at the very beginning of the Churban in Gittin, it mentions this pasuk Asher Adam Mefachad Tamid, and says that people who didn't follow it ended up in a bad way, like you have in the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. If they had thought ahead and realized we shouldn't allow Bar Kamsa to be insulted in front of everybody, then the whole story wouldn't have happened. And again, the other stories that it tells over there, so how does that fit with over here that we're saying that Mefachad Tamid is a bad thing? So Tosfos explains over there Mefachad Tamid over there means that a person is concerned about the consequences of their action. A person thinks ahead, should I do this or should I not do this? Is it going to have bad consequences? That's different than what we're talking about over here, where just a person is afraid, which does not the kind of fear that actually gets them to do anything constructive, just that he's worried. Mm-hmm. Similar to what the Alter Rebbe is talking about in Tanya these days. There's a difference between Atzmus and Merirus, that there's Atzmus, which is not constructive, and then there's Merirus, which impels the person to actually do something about it and do tshuva and improve himself.
Talking about Kamsan, could the destruction of the temple would have happened anyway? Could it happen in a better way?
Maybe, we don't know. This isn't the place to talk about it. Let's go. We don't know. Okay, because we have ground to cover over here. If you want, you can ask me about it afterwards. All right. Onward. Similarly, Yehuda bar Nosson have a shock of also Basra did Rav Hamnona. Yehuda bar Nosson one time was walking behind Rav Hamnona, Asmach, and Yehuda bar Nosson sighed. Omalei, so Rav Hamnona tells him why he's sighing. Yisurim bo Yahu Gavril Asuya Nafshei. You're sighing like you're worried about something, or you're trying to bring Yisurim on yourself. Yechiv, they have a pasuk in Iyos. Kitachad pochadji vayesayeni. I was fearful, and indeed it came on me. Like Iyos is saying, I was always worried about what might happen, and sure enough, now all the disasters happen. Basha yugurti yobili, and what I was afraid of came to me. So what are you saying? What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? That itself is going to bring the problem on you, like you said, like you were. Trach with a dangot, and this is the opposite.
Are we implying that kach shlech and kum shlech?
We're saying it could be. So not Omalei, but Asher and Mefachad Tamid. Again, the Talmud asks, what about the Pasuk Asher and Mefachad Tamid? And again, the answer is Hahubi Divrei Torah Siv. That's talking about Divrei Torah when a person is afraid that he might forget them, and that makes him review it. We're not talking about being afraid of what's going to happen. Begashmius, there you have to have Betochen that Asher that whatever happens is predetermined by Hashem and is for the best.
Not a very bright comment.
Okay. Onward. We said in the Mishnah, Hanichnas Lekrach, if a person goes into a city, we said he should say two tefillos, one when he comes in and one when he leaves, because as we learned in the Mishnah, Rashi points out a city can be a very dangerous place. And then we had Ben Aza, it said in the Mishnah, that actually you say four, you say two before you go in and two when you leave. So how does that work? Turn it up on him. When you're about to go into the city, what do you say? Hashem, it should be your will that you bring me into the city safely. Nichnas, once he gets into the city, Omer, then he thanks Hashem for the past. So far, that's two tefillos. Bikish lochis, when he's getting ready to leave, that you should get me out of the city in peace. Yosef, once he gets out safely, thank you, Hashem, for getting me out of the city safely. And he continues, just as you got me safely out of the city, so you should make me be able to go on my way in peace, and support me in peace, make me able to walk in peace, and save me from all enemies and all ambushes on the way. Now, this is similar to Tfilos HaDerech. So does that mean that basically the Gemara is saying over here we need to say Tfilos HaDerech? Or the Bach argues, no, there's a difference. Tfilos HaDerech, you're saying when you're traveling on the road. Here it's just the fact that you left the city, which itself is a dangerous place, then you have to say that Tfilos. Later on, when you're further along on the road, you're going to say Tfilos HaDerech like we learned in the fourth Derech. Okay. Amar Rav Masna, Loi Shonu El B'Krach She'en Donin B'Hurgin Bay. Now, Rav Masna says all this rule only applies to a city where they don't first judge a person before they execute him, so they can execute a person without trial. So then it's a very dangerous place. You could get into some kind of trouble, and before you know it, you're gone. But in a city where first they put a person on trial before they execute him, less one buzz, and either there's no issue in it, you don't have to say these tefillos, because then such a city is not particularly dangerous. You get into the city, even if you get in legal trouble, fine, you'll be careful not to get in trouble, or you'll get a lawyer or whatever, and you'll. Ikadamri, another version, no, Amr Abmasna, Afilah B'Krach Shadon in Bahurgan, right? No, these rules apply even in a city where they do judge before they execute a person, because Zim Dilemistram is an Inish, the Yalaplay is closer, because he might not be able to find a lawyer, he might not be able to find somebody to defend him, and then he ends up getting. Turn it on, Bobby. We learn in a brisa. Another case where a person goes into a dangerous place and makes a bracha. Hanichnas aveis hamerchas, Omer. When a person goes into a bathhouse. Now, bathhouses in those days were often built. You can find when you visit Eretz Yisrael, you visit any of these Roman ruins or whatever, you'll often find they had there would be an underfloor. Then you would have, you'd have pillars or columns or whatever, and then above them you would have a second floor, and the space in between is where they would put the coals and the wood and whatever for the fire. So that way it would heat up the floor from underneath, and that way you'd have a nice hot bathhouse. So the problem is, if the floor collapses, then you're right there among all the burning wood and coals and everything. So it can be very dangerous.
So the cold is, but people don't see any cold.
What?
You're above. Oh,
yeah. No, you're normally you're above, but if the upper floor collapses, right. it's only on pillars after all, so it could collapse.
The fire is on the upper floor.
No, the fire is between the two floors.
Okay.
The fire is between the two floors. Then above the over floor, the you have again. There's a lower floor. There's a bunch of pillars, and then there's a floor sitting on top of those pillars. So you're walking around. You're walking above both, but the in between you have is where the fire is. But if the top floor collapses, then you're in trouble. So, may it be your will, Hashem, that you should save me from this and from other things like this, meaning from other cases where a person might be in fire. It also includes Gehenna, for that matter. There shouldn't be any mess up or any avera that happens to me. One thing is, Mephoshim say that besides the fact that there's the danger of the fire, there's also the fact the person in the bathhouse, or like nowadays in Mikveh, is going around without clothes. There's much more chance of hear her or other untoward things you hear once in a while of people in the Mikveh that did inappropriate things or whatever. So therefore, you should say, well, besides the control, there's also, you know, there's certain inappropriate things that can happen over there. So you should be davening that there shouldn't be drought kapol of oven, that there shouldn't be something that would be embarrassing or an avera. And then you continue. If something wrong or some avera happens, then then you say that let my death be a kapara for all my averas. However, Abaye says you should not say that line, that if something happens and my mitzvah should be a kapara, because you shouldn't open up your mouth to satan. You shouldn't be saying what the bad things that could happen to me, because then the satan uses that as a, okay, so the guy himself is admitting that he deserves such things to happen to him. The Amr Shlokish, like your Shlokish says, we learned this earlier in the Masechta, the Chayim Tonim Shmei de Rabbi Yossi, we also learn in a Braith in the name of Rabbi Yossi, La'olam al-Yivtach Adam Pet Pivel Satan, the person should never open up his mouth to satan. Amr of Yosef Maikra, where the pasuk where we see that idea expressed. Yichtig, you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, where the Jewish people say, if Hashem hadn't left us a little bit of remnant after the Goyim came and destroyed Israel, we almost would have been like Zoyim and Amorda, which were completely destroyed. Maya Hadil, who Navi, and what does the Navi answer them? Shimud, about Hashem, you know what? Speaking of Zoyim, actually, you guys are acting a lot like the nobles of Zoyim. So we see, in other words, like they opened up their mouths to the Satan by mentioning Sodom and Amorah, that we almost were like that, and therefore Hashem says, you know what, now that you mention it, yeah, speaking of Sodom and Amorah, you guys kind of deserve their kind of punishment. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Next. So when a person is going into the bathhouse, again, he says a tefillah, asking Hashem to save him from the danger that there could be in the bathhouse. I mean, the pashtus also, the Gemara is included. The pashtus not, because our bathhouses are not built in the same way. They're not built with a hollow. They're not built with a hollow underfloor. There's no particular danger there more than another. Well, right. They heat them in other ways, right? Okay. Kinofik my armor. What do you say when you leave the bathhouse? Thank you, Hashem, for saving me from the fire. So I'm going to tell the story in this connection. Rabbi Bohu Ola Beboni, to give you an idea of the danger that you can have in a bathhouse that's built like that. Rabbi Bohu Ola Beboni, Rabbi Bohu one time went to the bathhouse, Ifchit Beboni Mitose, and the floor collapsed under him, so he was about to be thrown into the fire over there. Isrichashle Nisa, a nest happened to him, Kom Al Amuda, he was able to stand on one of the pillars, perhaps just one of the underfloor pillars that we're talking about. Shaziv Meir Bechad Gavre Bechad Eri. He was able to save 101 other people with his one arm, meaning Rashi says he held on to somebody with one or two people with his arm. That person held on to the next person. He had a whole chain of people that were all prevented from falling in over there by Rabbi Bohu holding them up. It was a nest. Yeah, we were saying it was a nest, yeah. Omar, so when he left, he said, Omar, Heiner did Abacha. Now we understand what Abacha meant, so why you have to say a tefillah to ask Hashem to save you from the fire, or thank you, Hashem, for saving me from the fire, because, yeah, you can see how dangerous it can be. So Omar Abacha, Abacha also says another thing. Hanichnas lahakiz dam, if a person is going in to have blood let, which is a medical procedure, may this business be for healing for me, v'tirpa eni, and may you heal me, keep kel roifa namanata, because you, Hashem, are a trustworthy doctor, or for us, Chaemeth, and your healing is the true healing, l'fisha ein dakon shemnei adam l'rafos, because really it shouldn't be the right thing for people to be involved in healing, and rather people should be davening, el should nagu, just they have the midhug to do healing, so I'm doing that, and therefore, one second. Abaye says you shouldn't say that. Don't say in your tefillah that really people have no business doing medicine except that Hashem says you could. When the pasuk says in Parashat Mishpatim, from here we see that a doctor is given permission to heal.
But this pasuk doesn't refer to a doctor, it refers that you will heal.
It means Verafi Yirafi. It means that the person who hit him is responsible to pay the doctor's bill. Yes, but from that...
Verafi Yirafi doesn't mean he will heal?
No, it means that he will be healed. Which means, in other words, that the person, the mazik, is responsible to pay the doctor's bill to see to it that he gets healed. So therefore, so we see that there's permission. In other words, the point of permission is, you shouldn't think that, as in fact there were groups who thought this way, that, look, Hashem made the person sick, how dare you interfere? So no, we don't say that. The Torah is telling you not like that. The Torah is telling you to interfere. Another idea of it is even if the treatment is not necessarily sure to cure, it may even be dangerous, it may even kill the patient, but you still have to show them, the doctor still has permission and obligation to try and do whatever he can. There is an idea, mind you. There is an idea that the Ramban talks about in a couple of places, and different other Sfarim talk about after him. You have certain people who are on a very high level. Actually, the Ramban says this was true during most of the time in the first Beit Mikdash. The people were on a very high level. They taka didn't need doctors. They taka a person is sick. The appropriate thing to do was to daven to Hashem that he should heal him. But in later times, when people aren't on that level, then the appropriate thing is to go to a doctor.
What's the spiritual meaning of the doctor being able to cure a patient who is afflicted?
It means that Hashem puts it in the person's hands. It's not your business.
No.
It's not your business to determine what the person's other avodas are. Hashem made the person sick. Hashem also made the doctor with the ability to heal him.
But what's the logic?
The logic is that Hashem created both.
So Hashem created both. To heal,
but not to say that the person is going to die. Right, exactly. Ki koi mayom. What do you say when you finish with the blood, right? You say, blessed is Hashem who heals for free. Or on the side of it here, it brings a girsa that the Bahag and the Rambam have the girsa Baruch Roifei Cholin, that Hashem heals the sick. Now,
you know that you should not be looking on.
Right. Hashem does it for chinam. Doctor's charge. Anyway, so now what we do is, so in practice, when we go for any kind of medical treatment, so you have, we're staying over here this whole Yehirotzen. I heard years back from Dr. Feldman, you don't necessarily have to say the whole Yehirotzen. You just say Yehirotzen lofanecha, and that's enough. You're acknowledging that it's not the doctor, and it's not the medicines, and it's not the surgery or whatever that's going to be doing it. It's Hashem. So you say Yehirotzen lofanecha, may it be your will, Hashem. And then you don't have to say that. You don't have to necessarily say that.
One second. Can you pray that it's going to be a good physician? And a good procedure?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's all part of it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When a person is going into the bathroom, he should say like this. He's skavdu mechubot. Now, a person is accompanied by malachim. So he's addressing these malachim. They're not going to want to go into the bathroom. So he addresses them. He's skavdu mechubotim. Be honored. Honored ones, meaning the malachim. Kedoshim, the holy ones. Meshur se'elyon, the ones who serve Hashem. Tnu kovid le'leke Yisrael. Give honor to Hashem by not going into this place. Haukum yimeni, leave me alone. Ad she'ekonis, be'eset esoni, until I go in and do what I need to do. What I want to do, v'ovei aleichem, and then I'll come back to you. Again, Amar Abaye lelemi inishofi. Abaye is not happy with that nisach. Don't say like that. Dilma shavki leva'azli, because then they might leave altogether and not come back. Ela lema, rather what he should say, the nisach is like this. Shimruni, shimruni, guard me, the double expression. Ma'ashah said it means guard me now and in the future. Izruni, izruni, help me, samchuni, samchuni, support me, hamtinuli, hamtinuli, wait for me, ad she'ekonis ve'etzi, until I go in and out, she'kein da'kon, from an adam, because this is what people have to do. You're malachim, you don't know of such a thing, but we're human beings in the air. That's the double lashon, that's Ma'ashah is saying. The double lashon is one for now and one for the future. However, However, the Avodraham writes that nowadays we don't say it because it's really only Yechidus Gula that could be guaranteed that they have Malachim accompanying them all the time. The rest of us are not necessarily on that level. So therefore, the Minhag is not to say that. You're not davening to Malachim. You're not davening to Malachim. He's asking the Malachim to help him, but they themselves are Malachim. They themselves are Shluchim of Hashem. So he's okay, so now...
No.
You actually, first of all, you have a number of Shluchim that are like that. We have Malachi Rachim, the Shosei Elyon, for example, one of the Shluchim that we say before Rosh Hashanah. We have Machnisei Rachim, Machnisei Rachamenu. There is, by the way, a good deal of Machloikis among the Rishonim about the propriety of saying such Shluchim. But the accepted halacha is that there are nuskos where they actually change them. But the accepted halacha by most kehillas is that you can.
Yeah. If you have Hashem in mind.
Right, but okay, but over here also he's not davening to them to help him like in some supernatural way or whatever. He's saying, look, you're always accompanying me, but please right now wait until I'm done. When he leaves the bathroom, what does he say? Baruch Hashem Yotzer Asa Adam Chochma, that Hashem created man with chochma. What is the chochma? One explanation is that the chokhmah is what we're going to refer to, that Hashem created different organs in the person, some open, some closed, etc. Tosfos brings an explanation that the chokhmah means that Hashem arranged, that first Hashem created everything else in the world, and then created Adam, so like everything is ready for Adam to, everything is prepared for Adam to eat. Hashem doesn't create the person without there being first food for him. And then Marshall says another one that b'chokhma means that a person is created b'chokhma as opposed to animals or not. Animals don't have chokhma. Because animals don't have chokhma. Hashem created them with chokhma, but I'm saying Hashem used chokhma and created them, but animals themselves don't have chokhma. Come on, animals don't have intelligence.
So we're speaking about going to the bathroom for the chokhma that Hashem gave us to know when we have to go, we don't.
Could be also, but could be. Okay. Anyway, uvarava nekavim nekavim chalulim chalulim. Hashem created within a person many different holes and many different hollow organs. It's brought, by the way, in Rishonim, that chalulim, I think it's in Avodraham, chalulim chalulim, the two words together are gematria 248, representing 248 evarim. Goli v'yadua lishnei chisech v'edecha, it's well known and revealed before your glorious throne. She'imi paseach echad mehem, ayimi sasim echad mehem, that if one of them were to be inappropriately opened up, for example, Rashi says, one of the hollow organs, for example, the heart or the stomach or whatever were to be opened up, chas v'shalom, ayimi sasim echad mehem, or if one of those holes were to be closed up, for example, the mouth, the nose, etc., he etchalam on the panecha, it would be impossible to stand before you. We say also, after the Shah Echas is actually a machloek because we're showing him whether you should say that. Because on the face of it, a person can live for Shah Echas with some of these things not functioning correctly. It's only eventually it would kill the person. So I think the Maharam Rukenberg says you shouldn't say it, but we say after the Shah Echas. We say you should have the EFL scan after the Shah Echas. Okay, so that's the bracha that you say. You have different nuskos, by the way. If you look, if you compare Nusach Ashkenaz did it with ours, they flip around the imi sasim and imi paseach. Diane Raskin points out in his notes on the Siddur that maybe the reason why we have the Nusach the way we do, Shemi Sasim Achad Mehem, or Imi Paseach Achad Mehem, is because first we're mentioning like there might be an inappropriate amount of Gvura, like something being closed up when it should be open. And then the problem where there might be an inappropriate amount of Chesed, or realize, so to speak, like something is opening up when it should be closed. People debate on Kitzei Arizal. Okay. So first we mentioned by mentioning the problem that there would be with an excess of gvura, and then the problem that there would be with an excess of chesed. Reminds me, by the way, of something interesting that everyone's talked about, the idea you have in the blood, you have red blood cells and white blood cells. Now, red is usually the color of gvura, and white is the color of chesed. But in the body, it's the other way around. The red blood cells are what bring oxygen to your cells. The white blood cells, that's chesed. The white blood cells are what fight off infections. That's gvura. So the point is, never made the point, because you have to have, each one has to be moderated by the other one, as we know how it is in Kedusha, that each of the spheres moderates all the other ones. If the ones that bring oxygen to the body were white, then they would overpower the body with chesed. If the ones that fight off infection were red, then there would be so much gvura in them, they would overpower it then. Okay. Next. My chosim. The question is, what's the chasima of the bracha? How do you end off the bracha after yotza? Omer Rav Roisei Chosim. So Rav says you finish off. Shmuel says, can't be that you end off Roy Fichoyim. Because Shabinu Abba, the Kula Amik Siri. Abba, which means Rab, is now effectively saying that everybody in the world is sick. What do you mean Roy Fichoyim? As if like every time a person goes to the bathroom, he's sick.
Wait, yeah.
Well, not really. Yeah. Ella, no, roifei chalbosa. The proper form of the bracha should be that Hashem heals all flesh. Because when a person goes to the bathroom, it heals the whole body, that gets rid of the waste. Rav Sheshes, I'm a machli lasis. Rav Sheshes says, rather, you should end off the bracha, machli lasis, that Hashem does amazing things. What are the amazing things? Rashi points out that, Rashi points out, based on a medrash, that you have a person is full of holes all over the place, and you would have, imagine like you blow up a balloon, the air is going to go right out. You have one tiny hole, but there's holes all over our bodies. There's the mouth, the nose, etc., and the yeah. and the air still remains within us, and we're still able to continue breathing. That's the masli lasis. The different explanation also, I think that there's a different explanation. I think that I'm offering that the masli lasis is that Hashem creates the neshama and the body, which are two opposites, and they stay together. Anyway, Amar Rav Papa, so again, Rav Papa makes the compromise. Therefore, we should say both, which is what we do. That's how we say it. Okay. Next, Hanichnas Lishan Amitofte. When a person is going to bed, he says at minimum the first parasha of Shema. Now, usually we say the three parashiyas, but for example, Pesach night, usually we say the three parashiyas because we learned in the first parak that an important part of Kriya Shema Shalom Mitzvah is to protect us against mazikim. The first night of Pesach, there's no mazik, and it's Leil Shemurim. Therefore, we go according to what it says in the Gemara over here, and we just say the first parasha. And then you say the bracha. Baruch amako chevlo sheina al enai. Blessed is Hashem who makes the bonds of sleep fall on my eyes. Usnuma al asabai and slumber on my eyelids. Umeyu leishen bas oyin and makes the pupil of the eye shine that a person is able to see. In other words, during the day. The next part we don't say. The next part that we have in the Gemara over here we don't actually say. Well, we do. Okay, part of it. You have hirof and lefanach Hashem and the kaiyish tashkivein and the shalom. May it be your will, Hashem, that you should make me lie down in peace. This next part, actually, the Rishonim say, was added by Rav Amram Goyen. So we don't have it in our Siddurim. We continue. Give me my portion in your Torah. Get me accustomed to doing mitzvah. Don't get me accustomed to doing averus. Don't bring me to do averus. Or deliberate averus. Or to test.
We
say it in the morning, right? Or to humiliation. May the Yetzer Tov dominate me and not the Yetzer Hara. In fact, learning Pegara, save me from bad occurrences, and from bad sicknesses. Then we get back to the part which is the original Nusach of the Baruch, which we say, I should not be scared by bad dreams or bad thoughts. My bed should be complete before you, meaning that there should not be any Rishoyim or any Psulim among my descendants. And one reason why we say that in the bracha here in Hamapil is because later on in the night, you may be having relations. So therefore, you're not going to say a bracha right before relations. So therefore, like this counts as a bracha before it. Enlighten my eyes that I shouldn't sleep the sleep of death. And it was give me back in the morning that I should be able to see and be able to function again. Blessed are you, Hashem, who enlightens the whole world with his glory. So that's the bracha Hamapil. So we'll continue tomorrow with the rest of them, with the morning brachas. One thing is the flash points out. Okay, so that middle part about the same chelki, the third secha and all. So again, we don't say it. Rav Amram Goyen added it, but what taka was his reason for adding it? Because like this, we're going to sleep. Really, a person by right ought to be learning Torah all the time. But a person has to sleep. So we're acknowledging that. We're saying, Hashem, don't think I'm going to sleep because I want to be poured with oil because I'm not interested in Torah and mitzvahs anymore. I am very interested, but I have to sleep. Otherwise, I can't learn Torah. So therefore, that's why Rav Amram Goyen added those lines. Why we don't say them now, and I'm not sure. Okay.